Watching Outlaws with Rebecca Hargraves and Devin Stack.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Outlaws.
Outlaws.
And this is a good one. This is going to be a big one, actually, guys. This is quite the story. Story that we've tracked down for you.
About this topic. I actually, because I'm such a big Insomnia Stream fan, I was keeping a little list of things that I could pitch to you. And this story I put in that list a few years ago. But when I read about it, I just could not believe that this had happened and that I hadn't heard about it before.
No, this is a doozy. this is special edition worthy tonight, or today rather. I'm so used to saying tonight, this afternoon rather, or tonight if you're watching the replay. So yeah, we have a lot to get through. I guess we should just get right to it. But the I guess the story. In fact, let me transition us to the little screen here. The story starts out with this. Oh, look at that lovely young man. It's hard to tell that it's a man a little bit, but this fish-faced man right here. So all the way back in, I believe, 1980, this young man here, Bobby Saffron, was going to go away to community college. Community college. He was a high-performing, high-IQ Jew going to community college. And he went to Sullivan Community College in New York. And when he showed up for his first day of community college, he was kind of weirded out because everyone that saw him was like, "Hey, what's up? Good to see you again. Oh, it's nice to see you." And he was just like, What are you talking about? I don't know.
Yeah,
you.
Some girls kissed him
on the mouth.
Yeah,
and he was just like, "What? Either people here are like really nice, or something weird is going on here." So he kept walking around the campus, went to his new dorm room, and when he got to his new dorm room, he was unpacking, and his dorm roommate walked in and turned white as a ghost and just stared at him. And Bobby Saffron said, "Well, what's up?" And his new roommate, Michael Domnitz, another Jew, of course, says, "Were you adopted?" And he says, "Yeah." And he says, "Oh, well, I think you have a brother that you don't know
about. What's your birthday?" July 12th, yeah.
And he has the guy knows his birthday, and he says, "Well, look, you have a brother named Eddie, and we need to go call him and let him know that you exist." So they go to a payphone, and they call him up, and he said, Bobby says, "Yeah, it was weird. It was like talking to myself. The guy sounded like me, and he was adopted. And he was adopted from the same adoption agency, and we had the same birthday." So they decide, "Well, yeah, screw it. Let's hop in the car, and I guess see if you're really my twin brother." And look, well, there's two of them now. Great. So
oh, it gets worse.
So he shows up, and sure enough, they're like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're twins. This is pretty crazy. We were both adopted and apparently separated at birth. And so this is pretty crazy. I guess, this is, who would have thought that we'd ever, we could have gone our whole lives and never known." So this story, because it's such a weird story, kind of the newspapers caught wind of it. And Newsday decided to run an article about it. And here's the article here where they talk about, these two boys that went to the same school, although Eddie, the second Jew, he no longer went to that school anymore. So it's Bobby and Eddie. Oh, it's Bobby and Eddie. And wouldn't you know it, it gets picked up by the national news, and it's in the New York Post. And in New York, New York City, there's three of them now. A third Jew.
There are only three. Don't worry.
It stops at three. So David Kelman looks at, or his friends actually bring him a newspaper and say, look at this weird story where there's these two guys who look exactly like you. And they have their, they have weird meat like hook hands like you do. And he's like, holy shit, that does look like me. And I do have those weird meat hook hands. So he gets on the phone and he calls up and gets a hold of, I believe, Eddie's mother and says, I'm looking at a newspaper here. And I'm looking at two people look exactly like me. And I was born on the same day and I was also adopted. And I think I'm related. So he goes down and they meet up. And sure enough, it's triplets. So that's pretty crazy. Right?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And then they discover all of these similarities that they had amongst each other, which I suppose is no surprise because they were, in fact, separated, identical, spontaneous triplets, which is rare in and of itself. But a story like this is virtually unheard of in scientific literature.
Absolutely. And they found that they had very similar personalities. They had very, you know, similar mannerisms, despite having very different upbringings. Here's some footage of them dancing around after they've because they were on local news shows because, you know, this is a crazy story. Triplets separated at birth, reunited just by pure chance. And so, you know, they're all excited that they've got this newfound fame because all of the newspapers want to do stories on them. And then eventually, after they've been on all the newspapers and magazine covers, they start doing television appearances. And so here they are with Peter Jennings. And again, everyone is struck by the fact that even though they didn't, I mean, they virtually were never around each other. Well, they, not virtually, they were never around each other for 19 years. And yet they are so similar, even though they're raised by three different families.
Now, one of the most remarkable.
Oh, wait, I think that audio is working, right?
Yeah. Isn't that Tom Brokaw?
No, this is Peter Jennings, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure that's Tom Brokaw.
Yeah, it's Brokaw.
Remarkable stories I've seen in some time. A story about triplets. They were born 19 years ago.
There it is, Tom Brokaw.
Ago, and then given up at birth for adoption. Each one growing up in a different family, totally unaware that he even had a brother, let alone two. And this is really Eddie Gatlin. He went to the same college last year, coincidentally. Friends discovered the connection, and Eddie and Robert were reunited. They thought they were twins. But then David Kelman saw their picture in the paper. They looked just like him.
I saw him coming to the door, and I opened it, and I looked at him, and then I closed it. And then I opened it, and I looked at him, and I closed it again. And then he says to me, you haven't seen me in 19 years, and you slammed the door on my face.
You all smoke the same brand of cigarettes?
Yes, we do.
You were all wrestlers at one time?
Yes, sir.
You all feel like you've known each other for 19 years, even though you've
definitely
not?
Yeah, totally.
How?
Feeling. We feel it.
We're all the same. As soon as we start discussing our personalities.
Our personalities are the same.
We always
our
talk at the same time.
We can't. I'll start a sentence and he'll finish.
So again, kind of bizarre considering that they weren't raised around each other. They had different economic backgrounds. Their socioeconomic backgrounds, you might say, were all very different.
Indeed.
All very different. So that's that appearance. They you know, but over and over and over again, every one of these shows, same thing. They all comment about how, wow, you guys are so very similar.
We fight.
Was it ever a worry for any of you? I know when you first met each other, there seemed to be no getting to know each other. It was as if, I believe you said, you already knew each other.
Well, we got to know each other overnight. Because we were so similar just looking at us. And then when we We spoke to each other. We knew how similar we were.
It was almost like we were just confirming. Are you exactly like me or aren't you? Oh, yes, we are. And it was just pretty much that.
Your parents, are they excited about this new acting idea? Or are they kind of behind the scenes talking you out of it?
I think they respect us because we are finishing college and we have a business of our own. We work the flea market and we're doing well with that. And we're going to acting school at night at the Corner Loft Theater. And we're just doing a lot of things and
very, very busy.
Yeah.
But it's all together. You know,
that was one sentence in three parts. That was amazing.
Yeah, I guess it was.
A, B, that, yeah, rather remarkable.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that they'd be exactly the same, sharing identical DNA? What a revelation.
Well, and it's interesting, too. I mean, obviously you could say, well, you know, their shared idea to all become actors now. Who wouldn't want to try to cash in on the fact that we're famous triplets now? But not everyone might want to do that. So they all were like willing to change careers all of a sudden and try to be actors. They were on Donahue and, you know, similar things.
You guys have been on the front page of every newspaper in the world.
True.
People Magazine, Time Magazine, even the New York Times, Good Housekeeping.
David, let's begin with you. Which one's David? I keep forgetting.
You're Edward.
Right.
Okay, who are you? Are you David? You're Robert. All right, Robert and Edward. Come on.
These three young men, they're all seated in the same position.
It was kind of amazing. They really were strangers. They looked identical to each other, but they were strangers, right? You know, they really didn't know one another. But their behaviors were so similar.
Our lives are parallel to a phenomenal degree. It's ridiculous.
We're all the same. As soon as we started discussing our personalities.
Our personalities are the same.
We always
our
talk at the same time.
I'll start a sentence and he'll finish it.
We all like Chinese food.
You were all wrestlers at one time?
Yes.
You all smoke the same brand of cigarettes?
Yes.
What kind of cigarettes do you smoke?
Marlboro.
Do you all smoke the same brand?
Yes.
Do you like the same colors?
Yes.
Yeah, I was curious. How's their taste of women? Is it similar?
Yes. Definitely.
I can't get over it, I'm telling you. Extraordinary string of coincidences, you all have to agree, right?
It's beautiful.
You say you love each other, but you've only known each other for such
Doesn't
a short
matter.
Time.
I've known him my whole life.
How long did it take for you to have that feeling?
Like that.
And the taste in women, by the way, they were all into older women.
Older women, which is really a really bizarre genetic component.
Right, and that's an unusual thing for all three of them to be into. So they obviously get a lot of press. At one point, Madonna sees them and asks them to be in her movie, the really terrible movie, Desperately Seeking Susan. So they make a little cameo here. There they are. I guess that's what got them wanting to do an acting career as well, is their little bit part on that show. So another thing that was similar is they all three of them had an older sister.
Mm-hmm.
An older sister that had about the same age gap, too. Like, what was do you remember what the age gap was?
Well, I think that she was four years older.
Yeah. So that was interesting too. And obviously that wouldn't have anything to do, but maybe that comes in later. So yeah, they're very much kind of like a, you know, local celebrity to some degree. They talk to their parents about how why were we separated? You know, if we were triplets, that seems unusual. A lot of times they try to keep siblings in the same homes. So why would they separate us like this?
Right.
And the parents decide to go to
Louise Weiss Adoption Services, which was the premier Jewish adoption agency in New York City at the time. Abortion during this time period was lower in the Jewish community, so they had a higher adoption rate. And almost all the Jews used this particular adoption service, which had a lot of credibility. It was very well known. There was a lot of government funding, which we'll talk about in a moment.
And they go to talk to the top brass to find out, well, how did this happen? So you had all the parents of all three of the triplets sit down at a table with the higher-ups and say, well, what's going on here? And the excuse they were given was, well, three kids, it's too much for any family to take on. And,
right.
And so it would have been too hard to place them. And so
of course, the parents were outraged. I think all of them said that they would have adopted all three of them, all
right.
families.
Right. And so they were like, well, that's crazy, because most people that want to adopt kids wouldn't want, they'd see them as like bonus kids. You know, this is exactly what they would want. And so they didn't really buy it. And then I believe it was Bobby's father forgot his coat. So after the meeting, he walks back in to go get his coat. And when he walks into the boardroom, they have just opened a bottle of champagne, the board members, and are toasting almost like you walked in on them celebrating having gotten through a very odd meeting that they, you know, a deception, a duper's delight toast, if you will. And he just thought it was really kind of weird. But the twins or the triplets didn't really care too much because they were kind of just riding high on this fact that they had found each other, or they were now famous, and they were getting into all the fancy clubs, you know, and they got an apartment together in New York, and they were kind of partying down and getting chicks and stuff. One by one, they got married. So this is all the wives.
She was a goy, I think, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's the only one that's not like ugly is the goy.
Yeah.
She's the shiksa. And then they decide to go into business with each other, and because the acting thing apparently wasn't panning out, they keep doing shows. But really, the business they get into is they start a restaurant, and so here's the restaurant called, you know, creatively Triplets.
Welcome to Triplets.
Welcome to Triplets.
Welcome to Triplets Old New York Steakhouse, home of New York's greatest singing waitstaff, serving generous portions of the best hand-cut dry-aged steaks, chops, fresh fish, and poultry. Old world favorites of yesteryear, and our egg creams are always on the house. Whether it's dinner for two or an event for 200, our talented performers will dazzle you. Triplets has a special magic for making people relax and have a great time. So come in and enjoy the fun at Triplets, the place to celebrate and party.
So, you know, life is good. You know, they finally found each other. The acting career didn't really take off, but, you know, they've got a restaurant. In fact, it did really well. I think the first year they did over $1 million in business. And, you know, they live happily ever after, right? Or something like that. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, their story apparently isn't all that unique. Jewish twins started to come out of the woodwork with...
look at that profile. Let's take a minute to gaze upon the beauty of this Jewess.
And now keep in mind, there's two of them now. Yep. But yeah, so these other twins start to discover... that who were adopted, that they've got these secret other twins in other places, and all through the same adoption agency, the Jewish adoption agency.
No, really. What was it like? It was like looking at an alternate version of ourselves if we had led a different life.
Not to be glib about it, but did it freak you out? Because you weren't doing the searching. You weren't doing the searching, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So you knew you were adopted.
I always knew I was adopted, and I was not searching. And I was at home in my apartment in Brooklyn with my 2-year-old daughter, and the phone rings, and I'm just da da da. Answer the phone, and it was the adoption agency. We've got some news for you. You've got a twin sister, and she's looking for you. And of course, yeah, my life was forever divided between before and after. And we got, you know, I think both of us separately got a little paranoid thinking, you know, oh my God, why were we separated? Has our whole life been a lie? Has it all been orchestrated?
Is that paranoid at all? I think anybody would be asking that question. I like how she immediately goes to paranoia. She's like, well, I'm a paranoid Jew. So is this Jewish paranoia or is this normal paranoia?
Am I just being a neurotic neurotic Jew. I can't tell anymore. But that, in the same way, they discover that they have all the same interests. They both work in the film industry, doing very similar jobs. They have a lot of the same interests.
You were both editors of your high school paper. You both went to film school. When you reached a point where you started to talk about each other's lives, was there a lot of similarities? Were there less similarities?
Mannerisms are inherited.
Yes.
Seem to be inherited.
It's kind of freaky.
So, you know, same kind of a story. You know, they've got all these things in common. They get along just great. And in fact, they immediately collaborated on a book. And, you know, same sort of thing. Not to the degree that the triplets were a big story, but these two were kind of a big story for a little bit as well. And
tell me, Devin, were there more?
Oh, there were more. In fact, there are these two guys here. Similar kind of a situation. He finds out through the adoption agency that he has a brother, and he tracks him down.
Flying out there, and I remember being more nervous about that one event than anything. I was out of my mind on that whole plane ride.
Dude, my God. Oh, dude.
How you doing?
Oh, man.
Wow.
A little bigger. Good eating, good living.
I mean, same luck.
Looking in the mirror. Oh, man.
It's definitely an eerie feeling. I'm going to look at it. And I just want to find out. I'm telling you.
The mime thing going on.
It's not 2 hours.
Stop looking at it.
Nice to meet you, Doug. Nice to meet you. And Ronnie, nice to meet you.
I have champagne at home.
Oh, jeez.
I'll take the edge off.
Right off the bat, we pretty much hit it off, and I felt like I knew this person my whole life. It was like I knew him my whole life. I think we lived a parallel life. We lived similar parallel lives. We got married the same year. We had kids the same year.
So once again, you know, they live in totally different areas. They never met each other, and yet they have these parallel lives, as they put it.
Yes.
So once, and also they were also adopted through the Louise Weiss adoption agency or services.
Yep. And who was at the helm of this? It was the Jewish Board of Guardians. So I think that by now you guys have figured out that this was a very large twin study that was done surreptitiously, violating basically every code of conduct that you can imagine. It was not illegal at the time because there were less stringent standards in the 60s. This was the study went through the discovery of the triplets because that pretty much destroyed the credibility of the remaining study, but it went through about 1960 to 1979. As far as we know, there have been 10 to 13 sets of twins. I think there was only one set of triplets, all identical, all separated at birth, placed in homes with different socioeconomic backgrounds, and only half of the people that were engaged in the study, that were chosen for the study, have discovered their sibling through ancestry, through things like that.
Yeah, none of them were notified. They were just, they all found out on their own.
Yeah, deliberately not notified. So let's talk a little bit about the Jewish Board of Guardians. When I first started reading about the story, I'm like, who funded this? Who is responsible for this? The Jewish Board of Guardians, they claim that they had no foreknowledge of this or anything like that, but it was their facilities. And they were responsible for choosing the home. So obviously they had to have some level of knowledge about what was going on. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to place these twins, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And who funded the twin studies themselves? It was the National Institute of Health. It was some philanthropic foundations. Surprisingly, one of them was the Viola Bernard Foundation. We're going to talk about her in a little bit. She was the protege of Neubauer, who designed this study, another Jewish philanthropic fund, and one of the twins was an anonymous private donor that was a twin, not one of the twins that was the subject, but he was a twin. He wanted to know more about nature versus nurture, and he put in the seed money for this. But yeah, it looks like the Jewish Board of Guardians Child Development Center partnered with Louise Wise Services with Jewish money, with government money, to fund this abhorrent, unethical study. It's just unbelievable that they were able to do this even in the 60s and 70s. I mean, good Lord.
Well, in the Jewish Board of Guardians, yeah. They were involved in all kinds of wacky experiments. I found this clip here of them talking about how they were trying to reprogram kids, basically, that had problems. And a lot of this, you have to think about it, the context of it. Like, why were Jews putting so much money into this? Well, it's because there's high levels of insanity among the Jewish populations that came to America around the turn of the century. You had a lot of crazy people in their population. Yes. And so that was something they focused on. And unfortunately, it's something they also imposed on the goyim around them, as you know, as a way of kind of norm, you know, so they wouldn't stand out, I guess. They wouldn't stick out as the sore, crazy thumb. And so, you know, I found stuff like this video here. It's you know, they were basically dealing with crazy Jewish kids and doing experiments and observations on them.
Bob's group includes Albert, who is suspected of being a latent schizophrenic. Albert was
referred for exclusive group therapy. He resists going to school, is afraid of the dark, of animals, and of children. He insists on helping with the housework and with the cooking. He plays only with little girls because he says boys' games are too rough. He has severe temper outbursts, pretends he's a gangster, shadow boxes with and shoots at his own image in the mirror. He peeps when his mother is dressing and bursts into the bedroom when his parents are alone. His mother's disappeared.
By the way, that's a nice way of saying he runs into the room when they're having sex. His parents are having sex.
Disappointed in Albert. She prefers his sister, 5 years younger. When Albert developed cysts on his breast, the age of 2 years, the mother feared that he would turn into a girl. The father is passive, self-centered, resents Albert's effeminacy, and beats him at times.
In addition to other personality problems, Albert has a character disorder.
Ah, yes, a character disorder.
Right, an unspecified character disorder.
So they have, here's the observation room. They had like, I wish I'd clip. There's another experiment where they're just letting the kids run amok. But like, here's Albert, the effeminate Jew kid.
Albert, the effeminate boy, arrives late. The therapist welcomes
Bag.
Him. Albert is cautious, though seemingly not too frightened.
Now, the funny thing is, compared to, I don't want to be the kids these day guy, but I guess I'm going to be the kids these days. compared to the kids these days, there's nothing effeminate that you can discern from his behavior compared to like just your average fucking Gen Alpha or Zoomer kid. Mm-hmm. And so you watch what they called, this is what they were basically, they're saying, look how gay he is. Like what?
Ooh,
like
check. They're saying it's pathological feminization. And this is clearly more masculine than the average male child today.
Like today.
Note how Albert delicately pats his hair and adjusts his collar. His movements are not characteristic of a real boy.
So,
like he's Jewish Pinocchio or something.
Yeah,
like
look how gay he is for fixing his collar and patting his hair. So, they did a lot of experiments and behavioral experiments on children.
Confusion in the live chat really quick. They only adopted these children, these Jewish children, into Jewish families.
Yes.
So this was not like a Jew envoy. That would have destroyed, it would create a major confounding for the study. So of course they had to adopt into Jewish families.
Yeah, this Sorry, was, yeah, this was Jewish kids adopted the Jewish parents from a Jewish adoption agency. Well, at least that was the front. The actual experiment was also conducted by a Jew, this guy right here. And so it was Jewish from, you know, top to bottom. Like, there was nothing about it that wasn't Jewish, you know. And so this guy right here is Peter Neubauer.
Ugh.
Peter Neubauer. Now, the funny thing is, Peter Neubauer, well, funny in a gallows humor kind of a way, I guess, is the reason he's in America, or was, he's since passed away, is the Nazis kicked him out of Austria. So he was one of these great, these wonderful presents that we got, these lovely refugees. Now, this was like the second wave Jew attack on America. The first wave, of course, around the turn of the century, where we had all the Jews fleeing Eastern Europe, the pogroms, they came here to enrich us with their Jewiness and take over New York City. And then the second wave of the Jew, you know, typhoon was around World War II, where you had Jews, instead of fleeing the Jewish behavior motivated pogroms, they were fleeing the Jewish behavior motivated Holocaust, if you will, in the in Germany and Austria and Poland, etc. So he was literally chased out of Austria by the Nazis for being like this, essentially. And he came to America, set up shop, and immediately started doing experiments. So he's the author of this study.
Before we get into this, he also, what he started one was in the United States, he started doing research on one parent child and the Oedipal complex, because he was fundamentally Freudian. And I read this study that he wrote that was evaluating children between 3 and 6 that were raised in single parent households, you know, not just divorce, but death and things like that. And the entire study is just about how this has manifested, how the single parent household has manifested in sexual confusion for the three-year-old boy, because he wants to have sex with his mother and his father is absent. It's just pedophilic, transgender. You know, the only people that were really addressing this were Nazis. The only people that were addressing it with real understanding and honesty. And since I've been doing research on this project, everything has been memory hold, absolutely memory hold. So it's just crazy that it's not crazy at all. It's totally expected that he gets kicked out by the Nazis for being a perverted psychoanalytic Jew. And then he comes to America, where he continues to be a perverted Jew obsessed with psychoanalysis and Freud. It's like, well, yeah, that's why they kicked you out, dude.
No, it's that's the thing, is it's literally the exact sort of behavior that got the Jews removed from Germany in the first place.
Exactly.
They were doing experiments on kids. They were doing trans surgeries. They were doing all this degenerate shit. And so, you know, the Nazis wanted to hit the reboot button and start their society over without all the Jews. And he was one of the Jews they removed. So,
What beneficiaries we've been of his wonderful research.
Yeah. And then they all came to America, or at least a lot of them did.
Thanks, Hitler. Yeah.
And so, a author who was reading up on all these Jewish twins and the triplets and trying to figure out, like, well, what's this experiment about exactly? Because everyone's been very hush-hush about it. You know, when the parents went down to go talk to the adoption agency, they wouldn't even say there was an experiment. There's not really an experiment mentioned, except for very kind of mysteriously sometimes it's mentioned in the literature, but there's the findings of the experiment are never published. There's no explanation as to what they were even really studying or what they hoped to gain by separating all these twins and triplets. And so the author of this article, and I forget his name, but he decided, well, I'm going to call up Neubauer and ask him to explain what this is all about, because he was going to write a story about all these Jewish twins and the triplets who are discovering that they were separated at birth. And Neubauer essentially tried to just brush it off and say, like, well, I can't really talk about it until we publish the research.
Tell me a little bit about the scope of the study and how many people were involved in it.
Special reasons, which if I were to go into it, you would understand. The study was only based on a small number of identical twins separated at birth.
Yeah, I'm sure there aren't that many that one could work with.
And there are many, many reasons which go into this. I don't want to talk about that now.
Have there been ethical questions raised about this study?
Yeah, there were questions raised by a number of people when we looked for these kind of twins. I spoke once to the New York Foundling Home, and she said, you want us to, for adoption, to give one baby to this and another baby to another mother? How can we separate what God has united and put together? How can we do that? And I said to her, but you are in the field of adoption. You separate mother and child all the time.
What an absolute, what a Jewish cope this is. But there's informed consent. There's voluntary separation in the adoption process. There is not that kind of consent separating, especially identical twins and triplets that have some kind of mystical bond and share exact DNA. It's such a cope. What an asshole.
Right. So yeah, he basically would say, ha 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 ha, but we separate kids from their mothers. Ha 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 ha. And so the guy was like, all right, well, all right, whatever then. What? Tell us the results of this study.
How did this study come about?
I tell you, I would rather not want to speak about it.
Oh, really? Why?
Until we have published it.
Oh, When do you plan to publish it?
I think we probably want to come out with the data in about a year or a year and a half from now.
That was 1995, and he says in about a year, year and a half. It still has not been published.
Not until 2065. They are sealed records at Yale. Nobody has access to them until then.
Yep, he is dead, and the records are sealed, and no one knows exactly what was going on there. But yeah, this is him with Freud's daughter, who was a real fucking piece of work, real complete psycho. And he was plugged into the scene,
he was a protege of Anne Freud. So she basically mentored him in everything that he knew in all of his studies. I'm sure she was deeply involved in the design of this specific experiment.
And she was worse than her dad by, like,
oh yeah,
as hard as that is to imagine. And then the woman working with him on the study was Viola Bernard, there's a memo I found where she talks about how she was so obsessed with individualism that she thought that all twins should be separated at birth, because if they weren't, it would damage their ego. They wouldn't be able to be unique little snowflakes, because of course, as you might surmise, she was a big believer in nurture. That in the nature versus nurture debate, she thought that nurture was everything. And so if you were to get two twins and you were to separate them at birth and raise them in different families, you would have completely different people. They would be unique, independent people. They wouldn't be in the shadow of their twin. And in fact, she theorized that the reason why twins were so similar, it was all nurture. People would treat them the same because they looked the same. And so it was incumbent upon them to separate them and free them from this bond. And so this was something that she advocated for, and when she would do so, especially when talking to people who didn't know any better, she would act as if that was kind of like the consensus that you should separate twins. And so the same journalist called her up and was asking her about the study.
Okay, I've got it on now.
However, occasionally there were some identical twins. If it was good for them to be placed separately, and the existing literature at the time, and this I have to emphasize, the child psychiatry literature at the time that we were talking about was of the opinion that the placement of twins who were identical in separate homes had advantages for the children.
And that's just not true. There's literally no research whatsoever that even kind of implies that.
Mm-mm. I couldn't find such literature. I wanted to cite such studies, but I never in my research came across anything really substantial that made the case that Dr. Bernard was making to me.
Viola Bernard has talked about literature that says that twins are better off being raised apart. I know of no such studies. I've never seen anything, nothing in the literature, and I've read pretty widely. I've never seen anything that argues for the separation of twins as being better for them.
So she was just making it up because she was trying to promote the idea that it was nurture, that nurture was what had everything to do with the outcomes of people. And of course, this plays into the bigger Jewish narrative, you know, the narrative on race. The narrative on race, whether you're talking about black people or Jews, you know, in white societies, that the reason why you have these different outcomes is because that they are nurtured differently. That the reason why black people commit more crime is because they're treated differently because of the way they look. And so that manifests their behavior because in the same way that twins act identically because the way they look the same. And so people treat them the same. And so they end up the same. And so this was kind of like the theory. And slowly you start to understand that the reason why that they were doing this kind of a study might have something to do with this nature versus nurture debate. Here's a quote from Viola Bernard here. She says, "We are still being," oh, this is because obviously they were not, they were being very secretive about this study. They actually had recently passed laws, informed consent laws that Rebecca just mentioned about how you had to, because there had been so many experiments conducted largely by Jews on people unbeknownst to them. And to be fair, and the CIA, although there's probably some Jewish influence there too, there was all these experiments that people were finding out about and being like, "Well, you fucked with people just to get like some kind of weird information that really wasn't even all that helpful to begin with." And so they passed these laws where you could no longer involve people in these kinds of studies without them understanding what the study was for and them consenting to the study. And so, of course, the twins studies would fall way outside of that. And this is a quote from her saying, "We are still being very careful about the research and do not wish to share information about it, especially in these days of informed consent concerns." So
unreal.
She was, yeah, so she was actively trying to keep it under wraps because they knew people wouldn't like it. And also you realize that, well, because this was part of a study and because we presume that had something to do with nature versus nurture, that might also explain why the three twins or the triplets were placed in a home that had a identical family structure where they all had the older sister that was equally, you know, older as all the rest of them. And the only thing that they changed was the socioeconomic factor, because you had one of them, he was adopted by a prominent doctor. I forget what his mom did, but you know, they made a lot of money. They lived in like the nicest neighborhood that you could. Then you had the middle class Jews, which were, I think one was a teacher and but they were, you know, middle class Jews. And then you had
blue collar.
The blue-collar Jews who were, like, fresh off the boat, didn't speak
English.
They owned
English. A grocer, yeah.
I like how that's, low-class for Jews, is they own a grocery store.
Yeah.
But that, right, but that's right. That's the way they looked at it. And so,
well, the real reason that they placed the older sibling was to monitor the families for sameness in terms of parental emotional support, because that would have been a major confounding. So they actually placed dozens and dozens and dozens of 21-year-old girls, well, not 21 at the time, but same age girls in these different families, and then monitored the hell out of those families, did all sorts of experiments on those families, and then chose when the twins came around for adoption, then chose to place so that they could control some of those elements of the experiment.
So it was all very deliberate and organized the way that they did it.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of, again, because they're very tight-lipped about it, and because the records are sealed, there's not a whole lot of information, except for this guy here who was an assistant on the project. His name's Lawrence Perlman, another Jew, obviously. I mean, just look at him. This fucking guy here. And this guy is very hateable. Just, I mean, even though he's the one spilling the beans, he only worked on the project for like 10 months. And he was, one of the guys they would send out to the homes, for example, to interview the kids, and evaluate the twins and take notes. But he was basically like the information gatherer, and he only did it for 10 months. And then he moved on to other, it was part of his PhD or whatever, and then he moved on to other things and didn't think about it until several years later when they were trying to get information on it. And he kind of gives you a little insight into it.
So when I was hired on in 1968 as a research assistant, I was mainly supposed to help with the organization and analysis of the data. We wanted to see if we could tease out some of the subtleties of these child-rearing processes and family dynamics and how that might affect the development of these two individuals who are genetically identical but are being raised in totally different families.
So there he lays it out that that's precisely what the experiment was. And then they found a woman who was actually close to author, the study, Neubauer. And they decide to go interview her in her beachside mansion in La Jolla, California. And so she gives them a little tour of her little mansion and explains how important she is.
My name is Natasha Josefowitz, and I was Peter Neubauer's research assistant. So, come on in. Would you like a cup of coffee? Here are some of my buddies, Michelle Obama and I.
I have it on good authority that she's a dude.
She is very tall.
It's because she's a dude.
I'm like a little shrimp next to her. I come up to her right here.
You know, he's definitely a dude.
This is Obama 3 years ago, and here he is holding my latest book.
He's a nigger.
I have to tell you, I said, Barack, I love you. He said, I love you too, and he gave me a kiss on this cheek.
You nigger lover.
Yeah. This is Robert Redford.
Robert Redford?
And Al Gore.
I'm not even sure I like Al Gore.
And this is Errol Flynn and me when I was 18. I thought it was a hoot.
Errol Flynn?
How fucking old are you?
Picasso's.
Jesus Christ, we get it.
So, after showing off how important she is, she sits down and actually, tells the people trying to look into this study a little bit of what she knows, because she was the research assistant, very wealthy, plugged in Jew. And this is her view of Neubauer's experiment.
Peter started thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to have a study of mothers who wanted to give up their children who happened to be identical twins and then could be separated at birth? If we could put them in two totally different environments, we would put to rest the dilemma. nature or nurture forever.
So now we know that was what the study was for. They wanted to find out.
There was more. I think there was more. It's hard to tell because the sample size is so small, but they seem to only really be placing these twins, placing the twins that had a parent with a serious mental health issue. And so it's, we'll get to it later.
There's that aspect to it too. So, here's what I wonder. They do mention in, there's a documentary where they interview some of these subjects and they all mention how, at least from what they're able to find out about their birth parents, that they all had some kind of severe mental issue. Like, one of them, their mom was schizophrenic. Like, in fact, the twin girls that we showed the clip from earlier, their mom was schizophrenic. The triplets, they met their mom once and she was kind of like a weirdo and a total alcoholic. And so there is that possibility and we will get into this later. Obviously because the theme of the show today, because those things are heritable like everything else, all of these people have their own mental issues, of their own, including the triplets, which by the way, I forgot to mention, we'll get back to this in all the, when the triplets were doing their media tour and they're talking about like I should have clipped that out. I forgot to clip that out. When they were on Donahue, one of the audience members stands up and says, and this is like in one of the documentaries, she's like, weren't you involved in a murder? And I'm like, what? Hold on. What? Come again? And they gloss over it so fast because like, he's like, no.
It was fine. It's okay.
It was just, yeah. And the other two triplets are like, we believe him. He's cool. And they just move on. And I'm like, hold on. What do you mean? Why did an audience member think he was involved in a murder? And then I start looking around and there's an article that does the same thing. It's kind of like, these three guys, they're finally reunited, which was a good change for Bob because he was involved in a murder earlier this year. And it's just like, what? But anyway, we'll get back to that. So all these kids had some kind of severe problem in their life. But I almost wonder.
It might just be because Jews just generally have higher rates of mental health issues. But it makes sense to me that they would conduct this experiment and see if they can environmentally cure Jewish genetically inherited mental health issues so that they don't have to engage in breeding with outgroups to try to eradicate them. And I think that was an element, at least an element of the study.
Well, that would certainly see if you're doing the nature versus nurture experiment, and you found at the end of the experiment that it was all nurture, like you were able to get these children of psychos, and they would come out fine if they were raised by like the fancy Jewish doctor. I mean that would certainly be something you could extrapolate from that. Is like, oh, sweet, then we don't have to we can cure Jewish neuroticism. And while keeping our genes pure.
Yeah, we don't have to marry Asians. Okay, awesome.
Yeah, well, which is also, I think that's rolling the dice, you know?
I know, right?
Because even when you mix Asians with white people, you get some kind of crazy results sometimes, you know?
Yeah, like what happened with Michelle Malkin and her kids, yeah.
Yeah, well, but the school shooter, Hapas, you know, you never know what's gonna come out of that. But no, so she talks about how that was the point of the study was to figure out the nature versus nurture. And as far as she knows, even though obviously the results aren't published, this is what she says about what she knows from being the doctor's assistant in terms of the result.
What they found out was incredible.
Our lives are parallel. To a phenomenal degree. It's ridiculous.
We're all the same. As soon as we started discussing our personalities.
Our personalities are the same.
We always
our
talk at the same time.
You were raised in different homes.
True.
I did not believe that it'd be as much hereditary as it was. That was more than any of us thought.
I'll start a sentence and he'll finish it.
We all like Chinese food.
You were all wrestlers at one time?
Yes, sir.
You all smoke cigarettes?
Yes, sir.
Do you all smoke the same brand?
Yes.
Do you like the same colors?
Yes.
How's their taste of women? Is it similar?
Yes.
Definitely.
We are moved to behaviors that we are totally unconscious about.
You were both editors of your high school paper. You both went to film school.
I don't know if you noticed, but mannerisms are inherited.
Yes.
Seem to be inherited.
Kind of freaky in your
room. Now, it's disturbing. We don't like that. People don't like to hear when they say, I have free will. We would prefer that we have some influence over our lives. Wouldn't you rather know that? That you have some control over this? And so finding out, never mind. Doesn't matter what you do. So I think it's upsetting to people to see how little influence they have, how little control they have. We don't like that. We fight that.
And it's especially upsetting to Jews if they're trying to push the idea that you can turn black people into white people. You can say that Jews are the same as white people in terms of their behaviors, and that, you know, it's all just a consequence of outside factors that make us different. And so you can understand why, after they've done this study and the results are coming in showing that, oh, even when we separate triplets, we put them in totally different families with all these controls in place, and we study them closely from the time they're infants all the way into adulthood, they're the same.
Yeah. But it's a betrayal of what we know about Jews and Jewish behavior, because they tend to know that genetics matter, which is why they engage in such strong in-group preferences.
Right. But that's why they know the results of this study, but they won't publish it. Mm-hmm. And so that's the issue here, is this kind of information would have been very, very useful when it came to the civil rights movement, when it came to a lot of the laws that we have passed. You know, this is a lot of scientific data that would show you that we're not all just blank slates. We're not all just, we're not all God's children, you know. We are very different people with very genetically driven behaviors, and that you can't, in a sense, that essentially makes multiracialism impossible. In fact, it predicts exactly what we're experiencing.
Hold on,
right now.
Devin, somebody is knocking on my door, freaking out. I'll be right back.
Okay. let me see what I can do here. I'll do this. Ta-da! All right. Okay, so the problem is with hiding these kinds of results of a study like this is it's completely screwed us over, because you went into the following decades of the 70s, 80s, and 90s with the impression that the opposite was true. When all along, they tortured twins and triplets to find out that this was reality. So it's really kind of disturbing on a lot of levels. And it also shows you why, you know, they were lying to the twins even. Like, so here's some of these twins talking to that one researcher, Perlman, and asking him why would they hide this? I mean, they're lying to us. They were even saying that we weren't even part of the study.
It's people making decisions about your life where you have no control, where they, some of them actively just lied to you outright. Lied to my parents anyway.
So all this information that they gathered and is locked up in these archives, what do you think is in there that they're trying to keep from?
No, there's gonna be a lot of stuff there. There would have been home visits and films, and there'll be psychological testing.
I appreciate you acknowledging that we were part of this study, because people said we weren't, so.
Oh, that's just stupid.
Well, that's what annoys you.
I just don't understand that. I mean, why lie?
Why lie indeed? Why lie indeed? Because, you know, just like, you know, the other day I tweeted out a story about how they did this experiment where they essentially digitally replicated, because we now have the ability to do this, the neural network of a housefly, and they created a very basic but accurate simulation body for this housefly. And they recreated the neural network of a real housefly in the virtual housefly and put it in this environment and then sort of just hit play to see what would happen. And this housefly, which they didn't train, they didn't do like with, you know, a large language model where you have to feed all kinds of data into it first and get it to, you know, learn all this information before it can use some kind of diffusion model to spit out text or whatever. No, they just recreated the neural network that already existed in a fly, in a digital fly, and then let the fly loose, and it was flying around, it was eating, it was looking for food. It knew how to walk. It was behaving exactly like a fly, which basically tells you that so much of your behavior is biology. And the more we learn, in fact, as a consequence of AI, really, the more you learn about the biological and structural factors involved in your behavior, the more and more it becomes obvious that race does matter, that genetics do matter. And this isn't even all that new. You know, there's so many things that we used to know before Jews started to obscure this kind of information from us. I was listening to an old radio show from the 1940s, or it might have been 1950s. And it was like an old radio drama where they were talking about, you know, it was like some murder mystery kind of thing, because I was just listening to some stuff on an old radio that I was restoring. I thought it'd be cool to, like, oh, I have this old tube radio, listen to, like, old, you know, radio programming. And part of it stuck out to me because there was this, it was about, like, some guy who was, you know, talking to his mom about marrying some woman. And the mom does not want him to marry this woman and have a family. So she lies to him and says, oh, well, you know that you've got insanity in your family. And he says, what? She's like, oh yeah, there's insanity in your family. Your Uncle Bob, he's like a real psycho. So if you have kids, you know, you're going to burden this woman with your crazy fucking kids, 'cause you've got that insanity gene. And he's like, oh, holy shit. I was shocked that was even like a thing that people used to talk about. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like some weird conversation. This was the way it was, at least the way it was presented. This was like a normal conversation that someone would have in the 1950s about considering the kinds of children that you're going to have and having obvious, you know, the same behaviors that you would have. So are you back? I think you're back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
It was my neighbor just frantically knocking on my door. And then when I went out there, he got into his car and sped away.
What? What?
Yeah. And then I saw him pull into his driveway. And so I tried to, like, wave him down. He ran into his house.
He ran?
Yeah. Am I going to get murdered?
I don't know. Did you lock the door?
Yeah, I locked it. How bizarre.
Oh, I don't know. We'll keep an eye on that.
I know, right?
All right. Well, hopefully that turns out all right. So, yeah, basically, I just played the clip of the twins talking to Perlman about how Perlman was like, I don't know why they would hide the results. And it's obvious why they'd want to hide the results. And speaking of which, you know, speaking of insanity going to your kids, I looked into that murder case that they just kind of, you know,
gloss over.
Yeah, so, like, here's an example that for Saffron, who pleaded guilty to charges in connection with the murder of an 83-year-old New Rochelle woman and is now on probation, the revelation that he had two brothers, his companion triplets, came as an added incentive in his efforts. And I'm like, hold on, wait, what do you mean? The in connection with the murder of an 83-year-old woman? And I kept looking around, and here's like another one here. They shook hands and hugged each other and went inside to recount their lives. Some of what they had to tell was painful. Saffron and another Scarsdale youth, Morgan Goodman, have been charged in January of 1979 in the robbery murder of year earlier of Eloise Henschel, 83, who was beaten to death with a crowbar while being robbed of a diamond ring in January.
This is the most Jewish crime I've ever heard. He teams up with another Jew to rob an old lady of her jewels.
Yeah. So I finally found the details. Basically, what Saffron did was he and his friend Goodman over here. Goodman had a girlfriend that lived in an apartment building with some old lady who apparently had some big diamond rings. And Goodman came to Saffron and was like, I gotta have those diamond rings because my Jew envy is out of control. We gotta get those diamonds. I gotta get the diamonds. And so, Saffron's like, oh, all right, I get it. All right, we'll go get the diamonds.
Get the diamonds.
And so he drives him over to the apartment complex, and Goodman's like, all right, I'll be back. If I have to kill her, I'll do it. And he's like, all right, I get it.
We
need diamonds. And so he goes up and he beats an 83-year-old woman to death with a crowbar, takes two diamonds, comes back covered in blood and holding bloody diamond rings. They go back to his house and burn his clothes and wash the blood off of him. And then the next day, Saffron and Goodman go to New York and sell the diamond rings to some other Jews for $2,000. They get arrested. I couldn't find out like how they got arrested, but Saffron gets off. And that's like a big deal. You plan a murder, or even if you're involved to the degree that Saffron was, where he was aware before the murder that Goodman intended to kill her if he had to kill her. Like that was from him. That's conspiracy. I mean, you're basically charged, just as much as the person wielding the crowbar, to some extent. He pleads it down. He pleads guilty to manslaughter if he rats out his friend Goodman. Well, so he does that. He gets 5 months probation, and has to spend the weekends volunteering at a retard facility. And his friend Goodman, the guy who actually beat the old lady to death with the crowbar, they threw out the murder charge over some technicality. And again, I couldn't find the details on what the technicality was, but they throw out the murder charge, even though there's a witness, his friend is testifying against him for this plea deal. And, he only does time, which I couldn't figure out how much time because I couldn't find any report on that specified what his sentence was, but he only got convicted on the theft. So they convicted him for grand larceny and like, that was it. And so I was just like,
she was 83. It's fine.
Yeah. So it's just like, all right. Yeah. Well, how many Jews were involved in that scenario total? Right. Cause there's the Jews that did it. The Jew that, because I think it was a Jewish lady that they beat to death. And then the Jewish lawyers. The Jews that bought the diamonds, the Jewish lawyers that got him off, the very likely Jewish judge. So it's just like, oh my God. Anyway. So that was that story. But then there was more twins. So that, in terms of the mental illness thing, this twin found out that she had a identical twin and decided to track her down. And she's talking about how she was raised in a very loving family, but all the same, she was always kind of like a very depressive kid.
I would say that I had a great childhood. I would say that I also had a lot of sadness. I have 1,000 pictures of me pouting. I would pout, and my mother would take a picture, and how cute I am pouting. I think I ran away like 20 times.
So she was just like this real depressed person. And when she finds out who her twin was, she calls up and finds out that her twin killed herself 11 years prior.
She was very glum, didn't smile a lot. I just thought, okay, our son was a happy kid. She was a glum kid. There are serious people and cheerful people and everything in between. So she didn't have many friends. She was much of a loner. We always had animals. She had a bird, Albert. She had her music. Her first suicide attempt was when she was 17. Even when she was on medication, she was still depressed. She also had guns from time to time and would go target practice, and that's how she finally killed herself.
That's hardcore for a woman.
Yeah. And in terms of the triplets, Eddie, the one that everyone was mistaking Bobby for when he showed up to community college all those years ago, also shot himself.
Yes.
Unexpectedly. He was working at the restaurant and didn't show up to work one day. And he was, you know, no apparent, his wife had no idea that he was even depressed. And you know, his marriage supposedly was happy. You know, the business was doing okay.
Yeah, he was experiencing an episode of mania though. Like he was calling people that he hadn't talked to in 10 years in the middle of the night, and he was experiencing these really big highs and lows. So they knew something was up, but it looks like kind of textbook manic depression that manifested later in life.
Right. And so he blew his head off. And I think there was, you were saying there was like another case, right? Like there was a third.
The Yale newsletter or whatever said that there were three suicides related to the twin studies, but they didn't elaborate.
So you had at least, you know, you had at least three of them so mentally ill that you had suicides. Now, the stupid thing about that is in one of the documentaries, probably one of the bigger ones that's on Netflix, they use that to basically try to say, see, it's not nature. Otherwise, all three of them would have killed themselves, you know? And it's like, come the fuck on. The fuck on. It's so ridiculous because they're still hell-bent on that, on hiding it, which is funny because, like, the whole movie – If you look watch it, they give you the idea that there's this mysterious study and what's in the study. They won't tell us what's in the study, and then they're hiding it, and then at the end you basically facilitate hiding it by promoting the like shifting gears and turning and giving the message to the viewer that really what the study proves is nothing, and we're all like snowflakes, and we're all individuals, and just because all the other shit in the movie that you just watched that showed how they were all identical and they're the same, that doesn't mean anything because this guy killed himself, and right. So they're we're all different, and it's like what the fuck? It's like they're so hell bent on their not having this nature component to things,
right? So, right, and. I geeked out massively with researching genetic data on nature versus nurture because there have been a lot of robust twin studies that have really, really good findings in terms of like the number of pairs and how the studies were controlled. I mean, this study, we don't know the outcome and the sample sizes are so small, but there's a lot of data on this. So this guy, Robert Plowman, he was a psychologist and geneticist. His entire life's work was parsing out the nature versus nurture issue. And he has such good work. So go check that out. He's not Jewish. And he did this study sampling 10,000 twins with 5,000 twin pairs. And he wanted to see the reading level of the top, because a lot of these studies, they look at the median, they look at the lower tiers, but he wanted to see like, is expert reading level outside of IQ, how heritable is it? And what he found was that between this and some other studies that he did, that all psychological traits have genetic influence. And so 50% of the variance, he estimates, intelligence, personality, psychopathology, and even more complex behaviors like educational achievement, divorce proneness are heritable. So people just assume that the remaining 50% are environmental. No. So what he discovered in his twin studies, which is really interesting, is that shared environments account for like 0% of this. But the remainder, non-shared environments, and that's what he calls randomness. So it's like things that happen in your life, accidents, deaths in the family, things like that. That is pretty much the remainder. But what makes this interesting is that those things and how people react to them, those are genetic traits. Like the way that you respond to a really negative life event has a very high correlation with your genetic predisposition. So basically what his findings are is that environment matters almost none. Like you can really screw up a kid by beating them, by molesting them, things like that. But outside of those incredibly negative life events, your environment almost has a negligible impact on the kind of person you are and what your behavior is like. And those non-shared environments, I mean, if you think about like your father dies, somebody that has a generally positive outlook on life is going to deal with those things, and like the passing of somebody or having an accident, they're going to deal with those things different. And those traits are heritable. So I guess the estimate there is like 70 to 90% of your traits, who you are genetic. It's all genetic. It's all about genetics.
And even your environment is genetic
it's
to some
genetic.
Degree.
Yeah. Yeah,
because people will say, well, you know, well, this person, you know, their parents treated them differently. Well, your parents' behavior, their way, their parenting style is driven by their genetics.
Yes, exactly.
And you are a part of that genetic line. And so even your environment, if you look at the triplets when they were talking earlier, when they were saying, oh, all three of them became wrestlers in high school or whatever, their genetic behaviors are in a sense selecting their environment. So
yes,
even though
exactly.
all three of them are raised in different households with different income levels in different parts of the state, their genetic behaviors are selecting similar environments. They're
gravitating
towards similar environments, and you know, with the smoking and so even like health impacts, like in terms of like, you know, all three of them became smokers. All three of them liked the same kinds of food and the same kinds of women, and you know, a lot of these twins, the same thing. They marry women that look very similar.
Yeah,
Those two twins, Gary and Howard, the guys that were talking to Perlman. I didn't clip it out, but their wives, they're both Jewish, obviously, but they don't look the same just because they're both Jewish. They look very, very similar, and they were married the same year and had children mm-hmm. the same year. And so even stuff like environment to a large degree is being driven and at least filtered by your genetic background.
Yes. And so a lot of parents will be like, well, what about love? I showed my child so much love. That's also genetic. Like the ability of a parent to develop and nurture and invest in a child is a highly heritable trait.
And even when you, and here's the other thing too, is even when you put I don't know if there's been a study on this, but I know that there's anecdotal evidence of when Black kids get adopted into white families.
Oh, it doesn't matter at all. Yeah.
Right. And there's some very high profile instances of this, like senators that
Colin Kaepernick.
Right. And they get adopted into these really wealthy or loving white families, and they still turn out, you know, maybe they turn out slightly better because of the economic advantage, you know, but like they have the same behaviors. They act way different than their adopted white siblings. You know, they don't just become white by virtue of being raised by white parents.
Right, and, right. And the socioeconomic background, it didn't matter for Eddie. He was the son of the doctor, and he's the one that committed suicide.
Right, and the one that actually did the best in terms of dealing with things was the guy that was, you know, he was the Jewish poor, you know, which means
yeah.
his dad owned a store, but you know what I mean? But like he was on the lower end. And so all these different factors are still, and looking in their case, it's not, or I guess it's more of a contrast because their parents, or at least the people raising them, weren't genetically related to them. But if you live in a household where your parents are, you know, where you share DNA with both your parents, that's 100% biology.
Yep.
So the whole argument of nature versus nurture is retarded because it's all nature. It's 100% nature. It's with that, you know, it's almost like saying I have these two exact Honda Civics and one of them's not the same because I dropped an 80-ton pile of concrete on it and now it doesn't drive as fast. It's like, okay, but like if you don't do that, you know, if you drive it like a normal car, You know, like they have the same top speed. They have the same handling ability. You probably have to change the oil the same amount of times. You know, they're identical pieces of machinery. And if you treat them a little bit different, you know, there's probably some threshold. If you exceed, like, you know, you drive one of them into a brick wall, then yeah, okay, now they're not going to perform the same. But right, outside right. of something like that, you know, you're going to have very similar results. So
yeah, I mean, we have a big problem with this on the right. I see a lot of it from like toxin TikTok, and I understand that we're being poisoned by our environment, but our parents were all lead poisoned. I mean, we've been dealing with environmental insults throughout the course of humanity, and it hasn't really changed the trajectory of humanity. So I understand that there's some environment that our food is poisoned, but it's not everything is seed oils and plastics, right? We're dealing with something much, much larger here. And if you have robust genetics, you're able to handle environmental insults better. You just are. And so I think that we're dealing with a lot of cope on the right about how important environment is to us, because people don't want to lose weight. They don't want to change their lifestyle. And I just don't think it's all that important. I don't think it really matters that much in the grand scheme of things.
Well, right. Like, and in fact, if you've ever done any kind of gardening, one of the things I found out early on when I was growing weed when I was a teenager was that genetics for plants even matter so much more than how you treat a plant. When I was growing weed when I was a teenager, I tried growing just like weed seeds out of like the shitty Mexican dirt weed that I got. And I got some seeds from like Switzerland or something, like, I'm, you know, mail order over the internet. And the difference, I treated them exactly the same, but the difference was fucking night and day. And that's just the way it is. Like, when it comes to, I mean, why do you think bull semen costs so much fucking money if you're a rancher? It's because genetics means a lot more than environment. You know, if you were able to just change the environment and get, you know, a better cow, people would just do that instead of spending like $500,000 on fucking bull cum. But they spend $500,000 on bull cum. So, yeah. I mean,
that being said, it's obvious also that environment can switch on and off genes in a way that we don't completely understand. I think Ted Bundy is a good example. Like, he obviously had the propensity to be a psychopath. He was a psychopath, but also he grew up with a single mother. He was abused by the single mother's boyfriends. Like, would Ted Bundy have been a serial killer or just your standard psychopath that didn't do anything violent in a different home environment? Yeah, maybe. But all of the stuff was there. It was already there.
Well, and there's epigenetics, obviously. You know, there's extreme, again, but these are all extreme examples.
Extreme examples.
It's like if you get a normal pig, like a kind of pig that you'd have at a farm, and you release it into the wild, it will grow tusks and it'll turn into a wild boar. Like it'll grow hair. I mean, it'll literally physiologically change in order to fit its environment. And it doesn't take that long. Cats are the same way. Feral cats are different on a genetic level after the first generation, when they realize that they can't just lay around all day and have you throw fucking treats in their mouth, and they have to actually hunt for a living. They get meaner, they get more skittish, and they actually have physiological changes that happen after one generation. And that's because they're responding to pressures. And look, there could be something like that happening in human populations, where you have some kind of extreme environmental pressure having a genetic impact. But it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's still a genetic source of the of the behavior and of the changes. And so that's the big thing. I see a lot of people, especially as there's people trying to veer into this Christian nationalism, this universalist bullshit where, you know, race doesn't matter. You know, and mask off on a lot of people now, you know, saying stuff like, well, you know, actually, you know, immigration is a wedge issue. We've lost that. We shouldn't even try to worry about demographics. And I'd rather live in a neighborhood full of black Catholics than white atheists. And it's so fucking insane and wrong. And people are, and to the degree, I mean, it's people are now denying science. Like, I understand, like, being skeptical of researchers precisely because of experiments like this. But throwing out science because of people that abuse it is insane. It's almost like
right.
telling your or I'm not going to teach my kids how to read because I once read this insult about me, and it hurt my feelings. And so my kids are not going to learn to read now because words are bad. I mean, that's basically what I see happening on the right is a bunch of fucking white people devolving into like these superstitious retards and, you know, embracing the most primitive way of thinking as if that's what makes you based. We got to fucking stop being retards, as they
retards.
Say.
Yeah. There's a lot of horseshoe theory going on.
Yeah. So anyway, that's basically the story of the twin study, the evil. Oh, and one thing I wanted to point out too, in these interviews, all the Jews, predictably, when they find out what the study is, this is their response.
And I said, this is like Nazi shit.
I know, right?
Here's the mom. Here's the mom.
I thought it was a Nazi experiment.
And it's like, no, actually, bitch, it was designed by a Jew who was kicked out by the Nazis.
Right. Who partnered with another Jew with Jewish funding to subject Jewish children and Jewish families to this experiment. You know, it's just crazy. It's like the myth of Mengele is just a projection of
right.
Jewish psychopathy.
Right. Well, and all those wacky fucking Holocaust stories, you know, about the masturbation machines and all that stuff. It's just crazy Jews projecting their crazy onto people. And look, the same. Look at how they've behaved with Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
the brutality that is on display for the whole world today is exactly the kinds of things that they accuse the Nazis of doing. And so, once again, this is just another example. I just thought it was funny because, like, every time the Jews would find out about the study, they'd be like, that's Nazi shit. And you're like, really, dude? I mean, it's literally, it's Holocaust survivor shit, actually.
Yeah.
Like, technically, it really is. So, that's the story. Let's take a look at Hyper Chats, or we'll go to Entropy first here. Entropy, we got Righteous Muffin says, can't listen now. Take my shekels for another great stream. Well, I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Then we got Blunderbuss says, just for giggles, can you predict the career trajectory of Lauren Southern? She's being interviewed by Richard Hanania today. Can I predict it?
I don't know. I mean, she's really jumped the shark.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really been friends with her or known her. I mean, I know
also,
like
who cares? I mean,
right.
Who cares?
Exactly. Then we got Alcy1, maybe, or Alky1, or Alcyon. I don't know. Loving the show, guys. It's beyond frustrating that the massive U.S. and U.K. data sheets needed to identify the connections between the human genetic variants and behavior are no longer even available to scientists. Despite it all being tax-funded, they know what kinds of inconvenient results we'd find.
Oh, of course. I mean, it was when I was doing research for this show, it was amazing the amount of information that had been memory-holed, especially about mental illness rates and prevalence in the Jewish community. That's just absolutely been memory-holed. In the 80s, there were some good studies and, of course, the Nazi studies that were pretty good, showing that there was a 50% increase in anybody that has Ashkenazi descent, like any level of Ashkenazi descent. You know, Tay-Sachs disease and Goucher's disease. They're common, and I think it's some metabolic error or something like that. But scientists at the time believed that it was a manifestation of these metabolic errors that led to neurological problems like schizophrenia, which is obviously of neurological origin. Now, if you look at any of the studies today, they'll say like no increase in schizophrenia in Ashkenazi populations, which we know isn't true. I mean, we could look at Jewish populations and be like, they obviously have more mental illness. So they'll admit they have more Tay-Sachs disease, that things like Tay-Sachs disease also cause neurological problems, but then they'll be like, they don't have more mental health issues. It's retarded.
Right. Then we got user account says, love the show. How do my fiance and I best scam the welfare system? I want to live rich like Jews in Lakewood, New Jersey. I've never done it.
My husband says no. I keep trying, and he's like, "Well, no, we're not doing that."
Well, I bet that's something AI could probably help you out with.
Yeah, really. Yeah, cover your tracks.
Optimistically Pessimistic says, "Hey, Devin, I sent in a super chat a few seconds before you ended the stream on Saturday. I'm not sure if you've seen it. Anyways, I'll check out this stream later. Keep up the good work. I'll have to check
that
out.
Thank you so much.
I'll check out the next show." And Entropy crashed on us, so that's all of them.
Awesome.
Let's see if I read. No, it says we're not online anymore.
I've got a bunch on YouTube if you want me to start.
Yeah, if you want to go through those, I'm going to try to fix Entropy.
Sure. And it's not too late. Send your super chats. I am Blonde of the Billy the Beast on YouTube. Let's see. March 18th already. Man, I'm legit scared. I'm worried I'm going to get murdered. Like, in what situation would you frantically be knocking on your neighbor's door and then just pull into your driveway?
And run away?
Yeah, just bizarre. Maybe should I go over there after this? And see,
maybe
see
there's a missile headed for your neighborhood. And he saw it on the news and he's like, yeah, really? Take cover! the Iranians, their missile's going to make it here.
I know. I'm like, shut up. I'm talking about the Jews on YouTube. Jacob Winkleman. Winkleman? All right, dude. I saw this on Mr. Ballin, immediately early life to the person conducting the study. Oh, I didn't know that. It has been widely talked about, but you're going to get some of that. Because those shows are the ones that have the most resources, the ones that people have already discussed. Righteous Muffin. Can't listen now, but will later. Here's some shekels from my favorite duo. Thank you so much. Matthew Hess, no note. Thank you. Todd Campbell, big dono. No note. Thank you, sir. Arcade Outpost. Please check the Kentler experiments that ran from 60s to 2000s as a sister piece to the show. They placed boys with pedophiles to pacify Nazism. Google search Kentler experiments New Yorker for the article. Is this true?
I heard something about that once. I've never looked into it, but I've heard something about that.
Neha says, Rebecca, it's Ron from across the way. I need to borrow some sugar. I'm halfway through mixing a pound cake. Please stop over immediately after your show. Thanks. Am I going to get murdered? If I get murdered, it was my neighbor three doors down. So bizarre. Tubot K421. I've always heard of the twin study growing up. I had no clue that it was tribe related. Yes, it's the Jewiest study to ever exist. Vincent Pendragon. I've also found that diet matters. If you know what your ancestors always had, it does improve your overall health versus today's slop that affects it. Oh, of course. I think so. And to be fair, I eat an ancestral diet. I don't eat seed oils. So I must think that it matters on some level. But I just don't think it's...
Well, again, we're not saying that it doesn't matter at all. It's like if instead of putting normal gasoline in a car, you put diesel in.
It's
going to have a problem. But yeah, we're all machines and you have to treat it like that. But putting high octane gasoline in your Honda isn't going to turn it into a Lambo.
Yeah,
is all we're saying.
Yep. Scribble Saga. No, no. Thank you, sir. Let me reload. I think I'm good over here though.
All right. We got one from Fubar Nation that says, thanks for pointing out another crazy example of Jewish behavior. Well, I appreciate that.
Yep.
Then we go over to Rumble. We got Soft and Quiet 1488 says, I hope you two will do some Thinking Like an Outlaw content like you mentioned in episode one. Great idea.
What?
Like as in like how to avoid.
Oh, yeah.
Avoid your crazy neighbor. We got Crazy Horse Josiah says, if Normandy never conquered? Yeah, he left out the ED, I think. England in 1066. We would be living in a whiter, better world because Jew enslaved and took over the monetary system. Also, Orthodox Church isn't the best place to look for a wife. Okay.
Now we got the cadence of that made it really hard to understand.
Yeah, well, the spelling of that, or rather the phrasing of it, yeah. The Jimbo Rockford says, gotta go to work, so I'll catch the replay. Here's some money.
Thank you.
Fanny Schrute says, Albert goes into the pit. Roof hole is for Negroes. /. Then we got Arisen Arian, or Arisierian, I don't know, says, my Dixie wrecked. Not sure what that means.
Come on. Get there, Devin. Think about it.
My Dixie wrecked?
There it is.
It took me a second. I got it. Cage Mushinjaro says, Woot. Likes to watch, says, catching up on past due support. I owe the both of you. Got here late. Looking forward to the stream. Cheers.
Thank you.
Then we got No Long Pork says, the older I get, the more I realize the stuff Jews accuse Mengele of, they actually did and still do.
Yes.
Fanny Schrute says, not a huge loss as they did it to their own, but wow, the entire idea behind this experiment is evil and sick. Is there nothing a Jew won't do? How about we ask D-Man? That's an inside Insomnia stream joke there. Then we got Mojack says, adoptees suffer from trauma from being removed from birth mother, four times higher suicide, substance abuse, emotional and learning disabilities, even if you put in loving family.
Yeah, yep.
Then we got Arisenarian again, just says support. And then we got Tom O'Hawk says, wow, what an incredibly Jewy story. Thanks for another great show, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Then we got Purple Catmint says, good show. Thank you. Then we got How's It Going says, someone ranted about the band Black Magic SS on a previous stream. They are the best band ever, and their NS imagery desensitized me to the point of watching Devin. Black Magic SS to Black Pilled Pipeline.
Ah, that's cool.
Then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan says, Ove, or Oive, rather. And then we got, that's how Jewish I'm not. We got Evergreen Dream says, the talk of growing weed reminds me, did you know that several years ago, Colorado instituted a law that barred white people from starting a weed business so that BIPOCs got a head start?
Good Lord, really?
There you go. That makes sense. Then we got Cage Mushinjaro says, another day, another study in the iron law of Jew projection.
Exactly, yeah.
Then we got Night Train. Night Train says, loving this new show, guys. Keep it going forever, please.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate that, Night Train. And then we got Cage Mushinjaro again says, maltodextrin, dextrose, modified cornstarch are all artificial man-made starches that spike the blood sugar and can cause diabetes. Supposedly it is what it is. Well, like I said, again, we're not saying that you could eat Oreos all day for every meal of the day. And if your genes are good enough, you'll be fine. It's like, no.
Like, no, eventually these things catch up with you.
But it doesn't, but chances are, if you're like some like dysgenic looking incel, it's not because you had seed oil. It's because you're just a genetic afterbirth floating around in the ocean, like the tide at Omaha Beach. Then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan says, there's nothing we won't do. And that is it, I think, on our side over here.
I got a few more over here. And I'm going to go over to my neighbor's house and see why you fucking bothered me during my stream. Let's see. Jacob Winkleman says, I'm not a traditional white nationalist. Winkleman. I really only want an ethnic core. I don't care if the last 15 to 20% is Irish, Italian, Albanian, Greek, or even the lighter Chaldeans. Okay, I can get behind that. I don't care if the last 15 to 20% Irish, Italian, Albanian, Greek. Okay.
I can live with that.
No white nationalist would really take issue with this at that point.
Yeah, if we were like 100% European, but 15% of those were like, the swarthy kinds, I'd be all right with that.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Thank you so much for joining us. We are here every Wednesday, although we've talked a little bit about changing the time slot. We might.
Well, possibly. We'll keep you posted. Yeah, because apparently we're going head to head with Mark Collette's show. Or we'll force him to change his. I don't know.
Yeah, Mark. We're going to get you.
Or maybe we'll go slightly later in the afternoon or something.
Yeah.
right?
We'll see. We'll keep you guys posted. And then on my YouTube channel, I am doing a stream about Iran on Friday with Mr. Cameron McGregor, who has explicitly told me to, you know, not tell everybody that we're doing a stream, but I just don't have the energy to be cryptic anymore, you know? So yeah, you'll see that on Friday on my YouTube channel. I am Rebecca Hargraves. You can find me on Twitter at blondes_tweets. Devin, where can people find you from my YouTube channel?
You can go to blackpilled.com. We'll take you to the Odyssey channel. I am blackpilled on Rumble. I'm black_pilled on X. And yeah, I think that's about it, right?
Yeah. Thank you all so much for joining. Oh, I just have one more come in. This is Todd Campbell. Have you ever heard of the reviewed have you ever heard of or reviewed, I'm retarded, The Net by Lutz Dombeck about Ted K cybernetics and the internet? I've neither heard of nor reviewed this. What about you?
Negative.
Negative. I'm sorry. I hate when people send in money and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's really lame. Cases.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. We will see you next Wednesday. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, Devin.
All right. You guys have a good rest of your day.
Bye-bye.